You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. Some possible insight into what a Chinese cyber espionage unit is up to. Hackathons from Beijing to Washington. Panda Stealer is after crypto wallets. Microsoft's Kevin McGee reflects on lessons learned in the last year. Our own Rick Howard speaks with Todd Nielsen from Worldwide Technology on Zero Trust. And Peloton deals with a leaky API. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, May 6th, 2021. Last month, Japanese authorities attributed a long-running cyber espionage campaign to People's Liberation Army Unit 61419. As the Japan Times and other outlets reported at the time, Japanese security services concluded that the TIC APT, which had been conducting cyber espionage against about 200 organizations, prominently including the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, was being run by China's People's Liberation Army. Kyodo News characterized the unit as a counterintelligence outfit, although it actually appears to be a SIGINT unit, and said that a Chinese engineer and Communist Party member had been referred for prosecution. PLA Unit 61419 is again in the news, this time with some possible insight into its internal operations. Recorded Future's INSICT Group has found procurement documents indicating that the PLA unit has sought to purchase foreign antivirus programs. The INSICT Group thinks it likely that the intention is to use them for exploitation, either to use them as test environments for PLA-developed attack tools or to identify vulnerabilities that could be exploited for initial intrusion in zero-day attacks. The specific tools PLA Unit 61419 sought subscriptions to include some well-known names, including products from Kaspersky, Avira, McAfee, Dr. Webb, Norton, and others. Using these antivirus tools for test and development strikes the Insight Group as a likely harbinger of supply chain attacks. Their report says in its conclusion, quote, given the pattern of Chinese state-sponsored exploitation of the global software supply chain described above, as well as China's exclusion of foreign antivirus software as an option for government organizations, the brands and products indicated should be monitored for future exploitation. Focus should be placed on adversarial simulations, penetration testing, patching known vulnerabilities, and monitoring for anomalous traffic related to these antivirus products. End quote. Coincidentally, or not, shortly after publishing its article on Chinese purchases of antivirus technology, Recorded Future's record came under a distributed denial-of-service attack. There are indeed coincidences, sometimes, because stuff does happen, but some coincidences do seem suspicious and worth a second look. We note that over the weekend, a Belgian ISP that serves much of that country's public sector also came under a distributed denial-of-service attack. The ISP, Belnet, has since restored service, but as Computing reported, the attack caused the cancellation of a hearing before Belgium's Parliamentary Foreign Affairs Committee that would have heard testimony on human rights in China's Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. As one Belgian MP remarked, attribution would be premature, but it would be naive to ignore the context of the attack. Other news about Chinese cyber operations suggests a motivation for Beijing's interest in promoting autarctic hacking competitions and discouraging participation in international tournaments. MIT Technology Review reports that U.S. intelligence services have concluded that an iPhone exploit nicknamed Chaos, disclosed by a researcher from Qihoo 360 during the inaugural Tianfu Cup hacking competition in 2018, was subsequently used by Chinese security services for surveillance of China's Uyghurs. The Tianfu Cup was established as a domestic Chinese alternative to such international hacking competitions as Pwn to Own. Trend Micro this week has described Panda Stealer, an information stealer spread by phishing that targets digital currency wallets. Panda Stealer has been most active against targets in the United States, Australia, Japan, and Germany. It's apparently a financially motivated criminal operation interested in rifling wallets for altcoin. Exercise equipment manufacturer Peloton is dealing with reports of a leaky API that could expose personal data of users, TechCrunch reports. Pentest Partners, which disclosed the issue to Peloton in January, says the API permitted unauthenticated requests for user account data. The API permitted access to a Peloton user's age, gender, city, weight, and workout statistics. If it happened to be the user's birthday, interested unauthorized third parties could also obtain details that are hidden when users' profile pages are set to private. Peloton has drawn some high-profile users, U.S. President Biden among them. The company says there's no evidence the flaw has been exploited in the wild, but TechCrunch thinks they've been dilatory in addressing it and evasive in their discussions of the issue. Peloton explained that they did act to correct the issues Pentest Partners disclosed to them, but that they didn't do a good job of closing the loop on the disclosure. Quote, we took action and addressed the issues based on Pentest Partners' initial submissions, but we were slow to update the researcher about our remediation efforts. Going forward, we will do better to work collaboratively with the security research community and respond more promptly when vulnerabilities are reported. We want to thank Ken Monroe for submitting his reports through our CVD program and for being open to working with us to resolve these issues. End quote. The U.S. Department of Defense has opened all of its publicly accessible websites and applications to its Vulnerability Disclosure Program. Part of that program is the Hack the Pentagon invitation to outsiders to take a whack at finding vulnerabilities in the Defense Department's networks. And as CyberScoop points out, more of the Pentagon's infrastructure will henceforth be whackable. The CyberWire's own CSO, Rick Howard, has been checking in with experts on a variety of topics. This week, it's cyber threat intelligence. Here's Rick.
I got the chance to talk to Todd Nielsen, who at the time was the lead for global security efforts at Worldwide Technology. But between the time that I did the interview and now, Todd has taken a new CISO gig and has yet to disclose who his new employer is. But we discussed how the old defense-in-depth strategy that I used back in the 1990s, you know, deploying firewalls, intrusion detection systems, and antivirus systems into an overlapping grid, has kind of morphed into a subcomponent of a much larger zero-trust strategy. Now, Todd is an acronym man, and he refers to defense-in-depth as DID and zero-trust architecture as ZTA. So listen carefully for that.
I think that zero trust, it's an architecture, it's a model, it's not a product. It's the new version of DID simply because it has multiple pillars. So zero trust includes the user, includes the endpoint, it includes SASE networks, it includes your router switches, network controls, it includes cloud. By definition, you have to lock everything down to provide a zero trust environment. And that takes multiple layers to do that and multiple components, multiple tools. But I also think, gosh, that DID may be good for Joe's Chicken Shack with five users, but it may not be good for a global top five bank.
Joe's Chicken Shack. I love that phrase, and I'm totally going to steal it for whenever I talk about small, medium, and large organizations from now on. Joe's Chicken Shack is my new small organization. But in my head, I don't hear Joe's Chicken Shack. I hear the Love Shack, baby. But Todd is right. Zero trust is hard to do and may be a bridge too far when it comes to the Joe Chicken Shacks out there.
I think a zero trust ongoing programmatic approach today is reserved for those larger enterprises that have the resources, time, and money to do it. If you just have a Shopify cart hosted on Shopify and you're selling widgets online and you're a small company, zero trust might not be good for that environment. But if you're an enterprise and you have keys to the kingdom, if you want to protect the formula for Coke, maybe you want a complete lockdown zero trust strategy around your crown jewels, but yet not a zero trust on open marketing information that you give out to all your clients. Maybe they use DID for something simple, but then they go back to the ZTA for something complex. There's never one right answer for every company.
Todd believes that it all comes down to forecasting risk and having that honest conversation with the board about their risk appetite.
Once you have your risk exercise, your risk appetite decided, and you have identified your assets, now you can apply the zero trust strategies to those higher risk areas that may need that investment today. Mapping risk to business goals first, and then your ability to execute is the tertiary.
One thing is certain, zero trust is not a destination. It's a journey that you will most likely never get to the end of. There are a gazillion different things you can do to improve your zero trust landscape. But the idea that an organization will reach some sort of nirvana zero trust end state where you can stop what you're doing, look around twice and say, yep, I made it to zero trust, that's not realistic. It's more like a mirage on the horizon, hovering just out of your reach as you inch closer and closer to it. Or as one of Todd's Fortune 10 customers like to call it, it's a unicorn.
It doesn't exist. That's how he feels about it, at least today, in terms of getting to the end of zero trust. To your point, it's a journey. I like to say it's programmatic. You can't say we're going to do a zero trust project and we're going to check it off and check these boxes. And when we get there, we have zero trust. It doesn't work that way either. And so I think it's very much programmatic. The best way to adopt a zero trust is to eat it at one bite at a time.
There is no question that zero trust should be one of your atomic strategies that you will use to decrease the probability of material impact to your organization due to a cyber attack. Over on the CyberWire Pro side, I did an entire season on my CSO Perspectives podcast about the first principle strategies that we all should be deploying, and Zero Trust featured prominently. But as Todd said, if your organization is the size of Joe's Chicken Shack, maybe you should focus on some basic resiliency before diving headfirst into the deep waters of Zero Trust.
That's our own CSO, Rick Howard.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And I am pleased to be joined once again by Kevin McGee. He is the Chief Security and Compliance Officer at Microsoft Canada. Kevin, great to have you back. We are just about at the one-year mark here with the pandemic. And I think most people would agree that it's been quite a year. I want to touch base with you and sort of check in with, as you've been working with your team and you look back at this past year, any lessons that you all have taken away so far?
Yeah, thanks for having me back again, Dave. We often don't really look at the sort of the people aspect or the layer 8 aspect of security teams. And managing a security team is always a difficult challenge, but managing a security team through a pandemic has been extremely difficult. And like you said, 1 year in, we're really starting to see exhaustion set in. People are feeling overwhelmed, and they're feeling like often that we're losing this war against attackers. So how do we think about leadership? How do we think about managing people, and how do we really encourage and support them through the pandemic? Because we're not going to return to a normal. We're in a new normal state. So there's lots of lessons learned that we've had over the past year, and had a chance to sit down with my team and really have a deep dive on what's working, what's not, and was really surprised with some of the things that we learned.
Well, take us through some of the insights there. What did they have to share?
Yeah, from my perspective, much of what I've learned as a manager over the years has been how to support and coach people in-person experiences. And I'm having to relearn and reimagine leadership for a video world. And I felt really sort of bad about maybe I'm not, showing up in a great way. But my team was really excited to share, hey, no, we're all trying to figure this out together. Interviewing, hiring, onboarding, managing, supporting employees you've never met before can be extremely challenging for a manager as well. But it also opens up a whole set of new opportunities about thinking about location doesn't really matter. We can look for the best talent regardless of where it is. That's allowing us to add much more diversity to our candidate pool as well and bring in new skill sets. It's also allowing people to sort of live the lifestyle that they want to, maybe in a remote location or not close to a major city. So there are some subtle changes that are making the work-life balance better, not just worse as well.
What were your team telling you about dealing with the ongoing stress, with the burden that we're all living in this world, the weight of existing, trying to do your best, doing your job, while you still have the reality that this pandemic goes on?
One of the big challenges that came up was just recognition. And no one really wants a pat on the back or a shout out, but a lot of the work we do, if we do it well, and the most important work, we can't talk about. So you can't get a gold star, or you can't get an award for often in cybersecurity. So how do we create opportunities to recognize employees? And then how do we create different experiences where we can sort of release stress and work together as a team? So our team came up with the idea if we would take on mentoring some startups and mentoring some students. And we would work with students that are graduating to coach them and help them break into the cybersecurity industry. And that one-on-one time with a student really gave them a sense of purpose, increased the morale, made them feel like they were making a difference, and gave them another person-to-person connection. But it was also something that we could recognize them for and reward them for. So it was very fulfilling. So finding some side projects or finding some other ways to give back as a team to the industry or whatnot is a great way to overcome some of these challenges and feel like you're making a difference.
What about for managers? I mean, do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, I think often we say do what we say, not what we do. And I think the main thing, and this is my manager actually told me, make sure there's something left in the tank for you at the end of the week. Because a lot of times I felt really incumbent on myself to be there for my team, to be super supportive and whatnot. And then, this has been a marathon, making sure that you're taking time for yourself. Is not only good for you for self-care, but also it's modeling the proper behavior for your team. If you're working weekends and you're working nights when you shouldn't be, then they're going to feel compelled to that they have to do that as well too. So they're looking to us to see what we do, to see what's acceptable, to see what's normal in this time. And our actions speak just as loud as our words. So as leaders in the industry, we need to make sure that we're setting the proper tone from the top as well.
What do you think is on the other side of this? What kind of changes do you think are going to stick once the pandemic is in the rearview mirror?
Well, I'm hoping it's a lot of the good that we take with it, which is, we don't always have to get on an airplane to go somewhere. We can hire people that don't live in a major city as long as they have a great internet connection. A lot can be done remotely. We can strike better work-life balances. I'm hoping we keep the good and we drop, obviously, some of the bad. What we will need to still continue to work on is sort of this always-on, always-present, back-to-back calls and whatnot. I'm hoping that doesn't stick with us as well. And we can sort of get back to a little more sense of separation between work life and our regular lives, but that's going to be a challenge, and we're going to have to be very cognizant of that, and we're going to have to really take action to make sure we're setting those boundaries, not just allow things to happen. Otherwise, our work will creep in and take up every moment of our times, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kevin McGee, thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.